Welcome to On Strategy Showcase. I'm Fergus O'Carroll in Chicago. Here's a clip from today's episode.
We've been all sold something like this is the job you're supposed to have and the car you're supposed to drive and the life you're supposed to lead. And what we heard from people is they're kind of like, to be like everybody else is a boring way to live. Like this conformity that we all are the same, it's kind of a trap. And so Dave's symbolizes to a lot of people that, you know, there's fun in breaking the rules for good. Like to live a life that isn't like everybody else is actually the magic in living.
That's Anna Scott Phillips. She's brand strategy director at TRG, the agency in Dallas, Texas. We are talking today about Dave's killer bread. And Dave's is a billion-dollar business here in North America. And it's a brand that has an interesting backstory. There are two brothers that were the founders of this. And Dave had a particularly interesting backstory. He spent 15 years in prison and brought a lot of his causes to life through the brand. The tough challenge the brand now faces is that Dave is no longer part of the business. And the brand is very much a fan of Ehrenberg Bass and the principles of mental and physical availability and distinctive brand assets, which I know will make Byron and the team very happy. And so the way that they're dealing with this absence of Dave is that they are amping up this character of Dave, who is an unpacked, sort of an illustrated character, muscular, sort of a Fabio of the bread aisle, and kind of leveraging very different characteristics and imagery that might typically be associated with breads and baking. So you're going to hear about that, and we're going to talk about the challenges the brand faces as it rolls the brand out nationally. It built in the northwestern part of the United States in more progressive areas, and where people are very conscious of what they eat. And as the bread brand kind of rolls out nationally, the Dave character will begin to sort of, in many ways, replace the person. It's Anna Scott Phillips, brand strategy director of TRG, and it is Christina Watson, brand manager of Dave's Killer Bread. Enjoy. What is Dave's Killer Bread, and what exactly does it sell?
So Dave's Killer Bread is a baking company. We bake and sell a whole variety of organic loaf breads. We've got organic bagels, breakfast breads, English muffins, hamburger buns, snack bars, protein bars. And actually now we just launched snack bites as well.
So what does it mean to be an organic bread?
It means that the ingredients and the process that you are using to make the products meet a certain standard that the USDA has defined as organic.
So it's probably like, I would assume, like fruit and veg, where the ingredients, the grain possibly is not treated with insecticides or fungicides. And that's probably part of the reasoning why you might get an organic label.
Yeah, if you actually, there's a great resource on the USDA website that explains everything around being USDA organic. 95% or higher of all of the ingredients in the product have to be USDA certified organic.
How would you rank the fact that this bread is organic in terms of a critical reason why people buy it? Do you think it's the primary reason? It's number three. It's number two. It's just a nice to have in general, you think, for your buyers?
That varies depending on the buyer's motivation, actually. So here's what I'll say. Dave's Killer Bread, when we hit the market back in 2005, you know, there weren't a ton of organic competitors out there. There were some, but there weren't a ton. And if we were only appealing to an organic shopper and an organic audience, we would not be a billion-dollar brand.
Exactly.
Because we are, the majority of shoppers are buying conventional breads before they come over and trade over and up into Dave's Killer Bread. So for some people, yes, it is that desire to include more organic foods into their diet, especially as we're learning more about the importance of eating organic. But for some people, it really just does come down to the fact that it tastes so good and that's why they're willing to pay for our product. It depends on the motivation. Some people, it's a bonus. Some people, it's the primary driving factor.
When did Dave's start and why was it bread?
So Dave's Killer Bread started in Portland, Oregon in 2005, so almost 20 years ago. And there's a real Dave. He's a real person. His parents, Jim and Juanine, started a bakery in the mid-1950s. So Dave and his siblings all worked in the family business. The story goes that once the kids were old enough to reach over their dad's workbench in the bakery, they started to work in the bakery. But Dave did not find a passion for baking when he was young, and he went down a different path in life than all of his other siblings and his parents. And it landed him in prison for a total of 15 years over four different sentences. And during his last sentence, he had this, what he described as a moment of reckoning, where he realized he wanted to be a force for good and contribute positively to his family and community. He made that deliberate choice to become a good seed, which one of our varieties of bread is called good seed. It's one of the originals, and that's where it comes from. His older brother, Glenn, saw that change and welcomed him back to what at the time was a family bakery business. And basically what Glenn, Dave's older brother, did was he tasked him with making a new line of bread that would appeal to a younger crowd and have tons of grains and seeds and, you know, killer taste and texture, free of animal products, non-GMO. And this was way before non-GMO project or even people really widely knew what non-GMO was. He worked tirelessly to develop what we know today as Dave's Killer Bread, took it down to a farmer's market in Portland, Oregon, and the rest is pretty much history.
So why wasn't it called Glenn's Killer Bread?
I think it's because Dave was the one who...
Because Dave's the guy who left for 15 years.
True. But Dave is the one who worked like 16-hour days to make these new varieties of bread. You know, at the time, the family business, which was called Nature Bake back then, it no longer exists because Dave's just got so big, it sort of absorbed the sister company. But that was a different line of products that were very different from what Dave worked on.
Is that, Christina, why this conversation with TRG has happened? Why this emphasis on brand? Is it because, in part, you were expanding SKUs into different categories on the shelf?
I think partially, yes. And partially because there is sort of an intangible magic to our brand that is rare to find in CPG food. And we wanted to capitalize on that. You know, if you talk to people who are diehard breadheads, they talk about this product and brand with a passion that, you know, I've been with Dave's for over 12 years now, and it still is humbling and mind-blowing to me to hear how rabid and evangelistic our fans are.
Why would that be? That it's because there's some people, including myself quite a little bit here right now, I'm like thinking, that's a marketer talking. There's really not people out there that love bread or are sort of, you know, evangelists for bread. It seems like it's sort of a manufactured idea of a community of belonging to Dave's. Help me understand why I'm wrong.
When you hear these words around joining and belonging, you're like, what? This is a bread brand. Come on, Anna Scott. Like, we're talking about bread. But then you hear people tell us, no, we're not talking about bread. We're talking about Dave's. And they'll say things, and we partnered with Nonfiction, who we're huge fans of and know you've had on your podcast, Fergus. And they helped us get into truths about the brand, but also truths around people. And people would say to us, they'd be like, look, I don't put Dave's in the cupboard. I put it out on the counter for people to see. And you're like, huh. Like, we're obsessed with cleanliness. We don't want stuff out on our counters, but we're willing to put Dave's on our counter. And then they'd say, when I meet another person that loves Dave's, they describe it as an instant connection. And they're like, we immediately know we're the same type of different. This is what Nonfiction helped us unearth, is that people are so wildly interested in what this brand represents. And it gets to start answering the question of, like, why people write these love letters, like, Dear Dave, comma. And so it becomes abundantly clear that people don't just buy Dave's, they join it.
And so it is kind of whack to think about, right? I mean, I can think about Patagonia as a brand that people might have a kind of a passion around, maybe some subset of Mini drivers or subset of BMW drivers or subset of many other categories. So is Anna Scott, is this sort of a subset of bread buyers, of Dave's Killer Bread buyers, or do you, is your impression that it's the majority that have this sort of level of enthusiasm?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely a spectrum, right? Some people join the brand, they're brought in by this killer taste and texture, and it's bread that's good for me. And so some people are absolutely brought in because of that.
Before we dig into the Dave story, I'd love to get your sense of, if you were to segment out your buyers, what would be their sort of motivations? Because for me, why did I buy Dave's Killer Bread? I knew nothing about Dave's Killer Bread. I still, until the recording of this episode, knew nothing about it. Why did I pick it? I picked it because it had that visual sense of being somewhat artisanal. It had a sense of it being substantive. Lots of whole grains, so there was this natural element to it. It has a little bit extra sugar in it, but it mostly felt like it was a more natural product and less processed than other breads. And I also bought it because I buy my bread at Costco, and it came in two bags and a thing. Right, so I was motivated by the value also. Where do I fit into the segments of buyers, do you think?
So that's an interesting question, because for us, it's not just about a demographic. You know, so many times you'll hear, oh, it's, you know, 25 to 54.
And I'm actually 22 years of age.
Exactly. So you fall outside of that demographic.
Don't be fooled by this gray hair. I'm actually 22.
Age is just a number. Yeah. But, you know, we aren't just for, like I mentioned at the beginning, it's not like we're just for the hardcore health nut. I only buy organic. I never eat processed foods, sugar. It's more about an attitude towards food and caring about the food you choose to buy and consume. Demographics are, you know, there might be some demographic skews within that, but it really is about that attitude. What we like to say is we're for anyone, even if we aren't for everyone. So like I mentioned earlier, you know, we take great pride in using the best organic ingredients. We do not skimp on seeds and grains. It's not like our seeds are just sprinkled on the top. You know, our loaves are packed inside. They're rolled in the seeds and grains. And all that means that, you know, full well, we're usually one of the highest price items on the shelf. So not everyone will be our target shopper. But if you're the person who, for instance, flips over your packages, you read your ingredients, you look at the nutrition facts panels, you are trying to incorporate whole grains or organic foods into your diet more frequently. You know, if you're that person who is deliberate and conscious about what you're eating and what your family is eating, you know, but at the same time, you also want something that doesn't compromise on taste, then you're our people. And then as a bonus on top of that, if you're also looking for supporting a brand or a company that does more than just make a product, Dave's Killer Bread also offers that to our fans as well in our second chance employment hiring philosophy. At Dave's, we hire people for the jobs that we have open based on, do they have the skills? Do they have the ability? Do they have the desire to do the job? Because if so, they should be given that opportunity, even if, like Dave, they have a criminal background.
We'll be right back. This series is brought to you by Tracksuit, a beautiful, affordable, and always-on brand tracking tool that helps you answer the question, is what we're doing working? A not-so-secret fact is that companies pay $100,000 or more for brand tracking, which is out of the question for modern brands whose budgets are under pressure. Tracksuit has been built by marketers for marketers and makes brand tracking 10 times easier and 10 times more affordable. Their research experts do the heavy lifting by using best-in-class practices to craft the questions and get your survey live. Tracksuit surveys thousands of people each week from panels of millions around the world to give you full visibility of your brand health in 30 days, with insights updated for your brand daily. Tracksuit is fast becoming the common language for marketers and agencies to measure, understand, and communicate the value of brand building. Check them out at gotracksuit.com. That's gotracksuit.com. Now back to the show. So Anna Scott, when Dave's comes to DRG or TRG a couple of years back, what is the ask at that time? What have they put in front of you to solve?
Yeah, well, we were really tasked with a question, Fergus, which was how to amplify the growth of Dave's. like Christina said, we have this Portland-born, it's a founder-inspired passion brand that we wanted to take to the national stage and expand it beyond bread. And there's such room to grow with this brand. But then there came a pretty serious creative responsibility with that. Like, as we grow and expand into new aisles with new people, we wanted to, like, protect the mythology of Dave's without removing the mystique from it.
When I hear you say the mystique of Dave's, had that been active as a message in the past prior to coming to TRG? Was it an active part of it, Christina?
It was, but not necessarily intentionally. Portland, Oregon, maybe Oregon and Southwest Washington, they know of Dave. But if you go to Connecticut, he's just a guy on a bag that's a cartoon.
What I understand to be the case is that Dave is no longer associated with the brand. So from a distinctive brand assets perspective, you're almost building a character rather than showcasing a person, right? So has that been challenging, Anna Scott, to understand, well, what are we bringing to life? We can't really talk about Dave as a person because we can't roll Dave out in at the local event, right?
So, absolutely.
How did you in your work? I mean, for example, when you had that objective of to amplify the brand, what did that mean in terms of what you needed to discover in planning, and what kind of planning activities did you undertake?
Absolutely. And I'll talk a little bit about the distinctive assets, right? You're absolutely correct. Dave is the distinctive asset. The character of Dave becomes the distinctive asset. And you think of distinctive assets like defined by Ehrenberg Bass, you see distinctiveness on shelf, right? Bold colors in a sea of beige. So our job at TRG was to deploy all of this distinctive asset that was so true in the DNA to bring people into the mythology without ruining the mystique that he has.
What you've been saying feels like an assessment of how he's currently perceived amongst his current customers. But what about in these new markets? Because you've got to obviously understand, how do you then express Dave in these new markets? Can it still mirror the way it's done in these more progressive, you know, Northwestern markets that have that richer, deeper sort of filter on what they eat, et cetera, et cetera? Were you just trying to mirror that, or were you trying to explore, well, maybe there's a way to adjust the personality a little bit or expand upon it? Do you know what I mean?
We kind of narrowed in on a burning question around, what are people hungering for today that Dave's could symbolize to a broader audience to help it grow? One thing we heard from nonfiction is that, you know, we've been all sold something like, this is the job you're supposed to have and the car you're supposed to drive and the life you're supposed to lead. And what we heard from people is they're kind of like, to be like everybody else is a boring way to live. Like, this conformity that we all are the same, it's kind of a trap. And so Dave's symbolizes to a lot of people that, you know, there's fun in breaking the rules for good. Like, to live a life that isn't like everybody else is actually the magic in living, and how boring it'd be to be everyone else. And so that is, yes, absolutely correct, Fergus. It was about what they're hungering in life, not just what they're hungering for at lunchtime.
What is meant by breaks the rules for good, Christina?
If you think about the different rules, either of the bread category or of organic products or of nutrition or of hiring, Dave's sort of comes in and we say, we're going to go our own way. We're going to go the way that we believe is right, even if it's the way that's maybe a little bit more difficult, like the rules of nutrition. People saying that bread is bad for you. We come in, we got this organic, delicious, packed with whole grains. You can flip over the bag and read the ingredients. And while some of the seeds and grains might have a funny name like triticale, there is, you know, that is what is in the bread. There is no weird scientific stuff that's put in there. Organic food, as the rule, people think, oh, organic is going to taste bad. We went ahead and said, nope, doesn't have to. Organic, it can be absolutely delicious, if not more delicious than conventional. People saying that the rule about who is worthy of employment, for instance, we said, nope, we're going to go our own way. We believe that you should be hired for the job, even if you have a criminal background, so long as you meet the abilities and the skills and all the things you need to be able to do the job. So we breaking the rules for good is a double entendre, because it's, we break them permanently, and also we break them for the good of something that we believe in better than what it currently is.
A couple of years ago, so many brands were tempted by being purpose-led. So major CPG companies like Unilever were almost suggesting that all of their brands need to be purpose-led. They've since changed that direction. And same with P&G and others. Was there a temptation to be purpose first, Anna Scott, because you could look at all of the good of what of hiring people coming out who were previously incarcerated. There might be a temptation to make that your purpose and to lean in on that. Were there discussions about that, and where did they lead to?
Absolutely. There was a lot of discussion around that. What's the role of product versus purpose? How do they interact? What one do you want for people to uncover on their own and experience for themselves? And, you know, the belief of power of second chances is so foundational to the brand. A lot of people naturally want to gravitate to that. But for us, this cause is not about selling bread, but supporting people. We had to toe that line really carefully, right? We didn't want to exploit a cause or exploit real stories of employees just to sell product. That was not the intent of the brand or TRG. So we were very deliberate and cautious to share those stories after you've gone deeper with the brand, right? It's something you discover. If we tell this story, we want it to be the stories of employees in our social channels, or, you know, after they've seen about our product and experienced our product, we feel that we earn the right to tell that story after they've experienced the brand, after they've experienced the product. And we want to be very purposeful for that. And so it was a decision to start and lead with the brand and the product to bring people into the brand, and then something that they want to experience on their own in self-discovery.
So for the listener, here's two spots from this year's campaign. The first spot, which you're going to be hearing, there's actually a woman walking down the bread aisle, and her attention is caught by this guitar strumming Fabio-like character on the loaf of bread, and she's drawn to this Fabio character. In the second spot where you're going to be hearing, it's a father and daughter in the kitchen. The daughter's sitting at the kitchen table, and the father's trying to figure out what to maybe make for her lunch. And you again sort of hear that reinforced guitar playing, guitar strumming sound, which is the Dave's Killer bread loaf that is sitting in the bread bin that the father is about to open.
Always organic. Dave's Killer Bread. Bread amplified.
Okay. Nuggets?
We always have nuggets. I'll get the plates.
Killer taste. Killer nutrition. Always organic. Dave's Killer Bread. Bread amplified.
So all these other aspects of breaking the rules for good, how were you activating them? Because it sounds like what you're suggesting is that people either, I don't imagine people are going to proactively go and discover that stuff themselves. So for those who are just everyday people, how are they going to experience those different aspects of what the brand does?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct, Fergus. The current campaign you see in market was really seen as the first handshake across America, like introducing the bread itself. Killer taste, texture. We're using these distinctive assets. We got a face, a name. Killer taste and texture. That was the first part of the campaign that was all about introducing the bread brand of Dave's Killer Bread. The next chapter of Dave's as it expands beyond bread into new markets. So this briefing is the work to come, really the work that we're proud of that's going to launch to tell the deeper story of the brand beyond just the bread or the distinctive assets used in the current campaign. Right now, Dave's only has 15% household penetration. Like, this has such room to grow. Christina, you take how many you think of those are breadheads, but I do think what that number indicates to us is there's such room to grow. And you're absolutely correct, Fergus. Like, not every one of them is going to represent the depth of the brand and in the belonging. But a lot of people find even the cues and clues from this brand compelling in the difference of the bread aisle, right? This difference as we grow works for us and against us. Right? It's different in Costco. Oh, I think that bread is a little bit better. I think it's for me. But it works against us as we try to grow to some degree, right? Different bread, like, that's a little bit of a risk for people. So our challenge in growing from a 15% household penetration is to make sure that we're leveraging the difference in this brand to bring people in, even through taste and texture, but then deeper into the story of it.
With this project that we're working on with TRG, we're definitely having our eyes towards, you know, growth, the national audience, that type of thing. But it's incredibly important to us in that process that we don't forget about that incredibly loyal group of breadheads, because they're the reasons we're a $1 billion brand right now. And I know that it's very easy to look to the growth and, you know, what, how big could it be? But it's important that if we do right by the breadheads, then all the people that find some part of that, that they want to be a part of, they'll be kind of swept up within that. But we still have to make sure that we're protecting the heart of what made Dave's Daves from the beginning.
It is Christina Watson, brand manager, Dave's Killer Bread, and Anna Scott Phillips, brand strategy director at TRG in Dallas, Texas. Thank you both for coming on the show and talking about this cool, not new, but it feels new to a lot of people, but it's been around for many years, brand Dave's Killer Bread. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And we will see everyone on the next episode.